Good morning. Welcome to another exciting edition of Marketing Pulpit International, New York edition with yours truly, Dennis D. Shipman, on a mic here in Brooklyn, New York. 6/26/2017, 63 degrees, and quite humid outside, 70%. Winds out of the north-northwest at 4 miles an hour. And we have an exciting show for you. Over the weekend, watched a lot of soccer, Confederation Cup. And my girlfriend was like, since when have you been into soccer? And I've always liked soccer. I played soccer as a kid in private school. And, you know, the love of it just stayed with me. I'd like to get my son into it, but that's a whole nother story. At any rate, the Republicans have been trying to force the health care repeal and replace in the Senate. And it's just a lighter version of what the House tried to pass a couple of weeks ago, maybe about a month ago now. And it's absolutely outrageous. I was listening to a senator. Can't think of his name, Senator the whip from Texas, and he was saying something to the fact that the Democrats didn't work with the Republicans, or they did the same thing. I mean, you know, it's some hogwash. But basically, you know, an analysis by both conservative and liberal think tanks, come to the conclusion that it's gonna displace a lot of people. It's not gonna really work. It's gonna make their premiums skyrocket. So, in essence, it does the same exact thing that they're decrying Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, for. You know, it's just outrageous. And you know, we know what this country has come to. You know, a lot of the Democrats have set back on their hands, and progressives, you know, especially the Bernie faction of the Democratic Party, and allowed this to happen because you think about it, 46.9% of folks did not vote in 2016. It's unconscionable, and allowed this corrupt administration, allowed the Republicans, who already had tremendous structural advantages, you know, through gerrymandering and just outright cheating. And we've written a lot about that. I posted a couple of things from my blog on my website. You know, it's hard not to, even as a small business person, you know, to be apolitical. A lot of people have the ability to do that, and that's fine. I mean, I don't necessarily fault them. You know, you want to be apolitical, you know, that's fine. But in the wake of, you know, a lot of the fallout, it's a direct consequence of this administration, and you know, the brutality that we see evident in the streets, you know, increased incidents of racial animus. You know, I think this country is sitting, is becoming a powder keg. I've experienced in increased degree of racism, and I try to shield myself and my son as best I can from it. Obviously, I don't commit crime or frequent high crime neighborhoods. I do a lot of work in the inner city, often in those cases, I get in and get out as quickly as I can, not because I'm fleeing the people, because I'm fleeing the public servants that are supposed to serve the people. And it's a shame to say that, it really is. But, to protect myself and my own mental health, you know, I don't want to be confronted by, you know, cops that are, you know, officious, you know, arrogant, drunk on their own authority and power, because I kind of know the law. And I'm not going to argue with a police officer, especially about him or her accosting me when I'm not doing anything. I'm not a young cat, so I don't tolerate that. And simply to, again, prevent myself from being, you know, having a sort of a contact. You guys got to forgive me, it's kind of early in the morning here. I have to pre-record all these shows simply because at 10:30 I'm attempting to teach IT skill sets to a population that I work with, you know, from the inner city. Very difficult population, you know, a lot of ex-offenders, a lot of really poor students, you know, students that ordinarily wouldn't go to even a junior college. So we're trying to get them ready to go, you know, A-plus certification, which is entry-level certification for anyone wanting a career in IT. And it's a difficult task. I'll leave it like or leave it at that. So we don't know quite what's going to happen with this healthcare bill. From all indications, all objective indications, it should fail. You know, but the Republicans have a majority, and they're going to continue to push their advantage. And you know, so just like we thought that healthcare was dead initially, you know, when it failed in the House the first time around, and then Paul Ryan managed to pass even harsher version. I mean, it's just incomprehensible how mean-spirited these people are. But this is something they've been wanting to do virtually for 70, 80 years, you know, with the event of the Social Security Act of 1935, which was expanded in the Great Society program during the Lyndon, the Johnson administration in the 60s, the war on poverty and that sort of thing, which to a degree worked. They threw a lot of money at the problem, you know, it was a lot of fraud and waste, but there's a lot of fraud and waste in the defense budget, and I don't see them coming out against that. I mean, the hypocrisy is glaring, and I guess that's, you know, where even, you know, as I said earlier, as a small business person, that's where I have the problem with, because if you're going to go after the most vulnerable segments of society, then you should look at those programs where they have, they're flush with cash, that, you know, the defense industry, and they can throw lobbyists who in turn throw money at, which is what co-opted and corrupted our political process in the first place. You know, all this money, the Supreme Court coming out and saying that it's fine to donate thousands and if not millions of dollars to a specific PAC, Political Action Committee. You know, I don't quite know what to say about the direction we're going. And we all know, however, that it's a backlash against 8 years of an African American or a black president. So, you know, we start from that premise. And then I guess we can start working backwards, and maybe we can find some equilibrium. But I think that what's occurred in this country is a cultural shift. You know, we have an emerging paradigm where, you know, this is the last gasp for a specific demographic. Older whites are dying and not reproducing, obviously, for obvious reasons. So you have Hispanics, fastest growing population in these United States, especially in some of the western states like Texas and New Mexico. They're almost the dominant population in those states, Arizona. And then on extreme coast, you know, the West Coast, and you'd have huge percentages of African Americans. And so, you know, within the next 15 to 20 years, you know, whites will be the minority. So they have very cleverly created rules, and this is what they're doing now. And why we sit back, and this is what's insane to me. You know, I told you I was in a barbershop a few months ago, not maybe more than a few months ago, because I haven't been to that barbershop in almost a year. And you have a great many African Americans that have brought into the white supremacist party line. They really have. They don't even know that they're buying into it. And this is what I'm saying about how ignorance really hurts us in the African American community. Because, and I had this conversation with someone very, very close to me. I said, you know, listen, we have to stop thinking like Negroes. You know, we have to have data when we debate and argue. You know, it's not good enough to simply have a quote unquote opinion. We can have opinions about anything, but we can't have different facts about everything. So the basis for any debate is, you know, are you coming with a set of facts that are defensible? And if you're not coming with defensible facts, then, you know, we don't have a basis to a debate. We're just arguing. So, and that's the difference between an argument and a debate. A debate is when both sides, both parties, both participants in the debate have defensible facts. Argument is where one or the other parties lacks defensible facts. So let's take a break, come back on the other side, finish talking about this disastrous healthcare bill that the Senate is trying to foist upon an American, unsuspecting American public.
The Endangered Species Act of 1973 is one of the dozens the United States Environmental Law was passed in the 1970s. Signed into law by President Richard M. Nixon on December 28, 1973, it was designed to protect critically endangered species from extinction as a consequence of economic growth and development untempered by adequate concern and conservation. The U.S. Supreme Court found that the plain intent of Congress to engage in the ESA was to halt and reverse a trend towards species extinction, whatever it was. Then why are black boys on this list? Black boys are an endangered species. Go to GoFundMe right now. Click on our link and contribute to this important cause. Thank you.
And we're back here at Marketing Public International, New York edition, with yours truly, Dennis D. Shipman. Sunny 63 degrees here on Monday, June 26, 2017. There's a piece in the New York Times about this healthcare bill. Let's read a little bit of it. Senate Republicans scrambled Sunday to rally support for their healthcare bill as opposition continues to build inside and outside Congress. And as several Republican senators questioned whether it could be approved this week, President Trump expressed confidence that the bill to repeal the guts of the Affordable Care Act would pass. Healthcare is a very, very tough thing to get, Trump said in an interview shown on Sunday on Fox News. But I think we're going to get it. We don't have too much of a choice because the alternative is the dead carcass of Obamacare, quote unquote, end quote. With Democrats solidly opposed to the legislation, Senate Republicans must find the votes from within. They can afford to lose only two votes, but five Republican senators have announced that they cannot support the health care bill as drafted, and others have expressed concerns. Senate leaders have been trying to lock down Republican votes by funneling money to red states, engineering a special deal for Alaska, and arguing that they could ensure more people at a lower cost than the House, which passed a repeal bill last month. But as more analysis of the bill reached state officials, especially in places that expanded Medicaid access under the Affordable Care Act, misgivings grew. Senator Bill Cassidy, a Louisiana Republican and a doctor, was considered a critical vote, said he remained undecided. Louisiana, which is high level of poverty, recently expanded Medicaid. There are things in this bill which adversely affect my state that are peculiar to my state, Mr. Cassidy said on CBS's Face the Nation. The bill was drafted in secret, mainly by the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, who unveiled it on Thursday. McConnell wants a vote this week before the lawmakers take a break for the 4th July holiday. Senate Republican Jerry Moran of Kansas, usually reliable vote for Senate Republican leaders, sit on Fox News and just don't know whether the votes will be there by the end of the week. Over the weekend, senators and their aides were poring over the bill, drafting possible amendments, preparing speeches, and compiling personal stories from constituents whom they portrayed as either beneficiaries or victims of the Affordable Care Act. But the bill's supporters are battling an internal threat, reluctant Republicans. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin says Sunday that there's no way we should be voting on the legislation this week. No way, end quote. I have a hard time believing Wisconsin constituents or even myself will have enough time to properly evaluate this for me to vote for a motion to proceed, Mr. Johnson said on ABC's NBC's Meet the Press. And Senator Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, said on ABC's This Week, it's hard for me to see the bill passing this week. But that's up to the majority leader. We could well be in an all-night a couple of nights. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the National Federation of Independent Business, and the National Retail Foundation have all said they support the bill. Thomas J. Donahue, president of the Chamber of Commerce, said it would help, quote-unquote, stabilize crumbling insurance markets and eliminate ill-conceived Washington mandates and taxes. But much of the nation's $3 trillion healthcare industry opposes the bill. And Mr. McConnell has done little to woo health care stakeholders whom Mr. Obama courted assiduously from his first months in office. The concerns expressed by outside groups appear to be growing. Top lieutenants in Charles G. and David A. Koch's political network sharply criticized the legislation over the weekend, saying it was insufficiently conservative and did not do enough to rein in the growth of Medicaid. And a number of Republican governors have joined doctors, hospital, and patient advocacy groups in opposing the bill, in part because of its cuts to Medicaid. Mr. McConnell has only a few days to wheel, deal, and cajole reluctant senators to get behind the legislation that has grown less popular with more exposure. He has considerable firepower to win votes by guaranteeing amendments that would address the concerns of individual Republican senators, and by playing on their loyalty to him and to conservative voters still demanding an end to the Affordable Care Act. At the same time, Democrats say he has striking liabilities. Mr. Trump has endorsed the bill, and Democrats say that they will take every opportunity to link the legislation to an unpopular president. And the Democratic wall of opposition is backed by less partisan voices. Senators are being flooded with appeals like this from the advocacy arm of the American Cancer Society. Cancer is scary enough. Don't take away our coverage. The American Childhood Cancer Organization, a charitable group formed by parents, is mobilizing a small army of grassroots lobbyists with the message that the bill, with its deep cuts to Medicaid, will threaten the lives of children battling cancer. The United States Conference of Catholic Bishops said the Senate bill was unacceptable as written and would wreak havoc on low-income families. At the same time, the bishops said they like two sections that seek to prohibit the use of taxpayer funds to pay for abortion or plans that cover it. Republicans are finding allies to be few and inconsistent. Mr. Trump has said he is, quote-unquote, very supportive of the Senate bill, but that support will be of limited help to Mr. McConnell. Few senators feel loyal to Mr. Trump, whose erratic message has often weakened his influence on Capitol Hill. After pushing the passage of the House repeal bill, he criticized it as mean several weeks later. Spokesman Sarah Huckabee Sanders said last week that Mr. Trump did not necessarily support cuts to Medicaid, even though his budget in the Senate bill would make such cuts. Kellyanne Conway, a top advisor to Mr. Trump, claimed on Sunday that the Senate bill did not actually cut Medicaid. Ms. Collins said, "I respectfully disagree with her analysis." So far, five Republican senators announced that they cannot support the bill as drafted. Dean Heller of Nevada, who says it cuts coverage too deeply, and four conservatives, Rand Paul of Kentucky, Ted Cruz of Texas, Mike Lee of Utah, and Mr. Johnson, who said it does not do enough to lower health care costs. Other Republicans like Ms. Collins and Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska have expressed misgivings, and Senator Ben Sass of Nebraska declined to say on Sunday how he would vote. Senate leaders trying to muster support are looking for ways to address a conspicuous omission. The bill requires insurers to accept anyone who applies, but repeals the mandates for people to have coverage and does not replace it with anything, so people could wait and buy insurance only when they need it. Insurers say they need a large number of healthy people to help pay for those who are sick. Republicans said they might reverse their bill to establish a six-month waiting period for people to go without insurance and then want to sign up, in the belief that this would encourage consumers to maintain continuous coverage. The House bill has an incentive imposing a 30% surcharge on premium for people who have gone without insurance. But the Congressional Budget Office said this provision could backfire. As a result of the surcharge, it said 2 million fewer people could enroll, and the people most likely to be deterred are those who are healthy. The Senate's answer also has potential problems for someone with cancer. A six-month waiting period could be a death sentence. And the Senate fight is happening amid striking shift in public opinion. 51% of Americans now have favorable view of the Affordable Care Act, according to a monthly tracking poll by the Kaiser Family Foundation. That's the first time in our 79 tracking polls over 7 years that this share has topped 50%, said Craig Pawlowski, a spokesman for the foundation. Medicaid is by far the largest program of federal grants to the states, and state officials are always trying to tweak the formula for distributing that money to their advantage. The House and Senate bills would convert Medicaid from an open-ended entitlement program to a system of per capita payments for beneficiaries. A novel feature, the Senate bill would redistribute federal Medicaid money from higher-spending states like New York to lower-spending states like Alabama. One noteworthy exception to this provision is tailor-made for Alaska. This paragraph should not apply to any state that has a population density of less than 15 individuals per square mile, it says. Only five states, Alaska, Montana, North Dakota, and South Dakota, and Wyoming meet that criteria. And Alaska's two Republican senators have expressed concern about the bill's potential effect on their state, where medical costs are exceptionally high. Ms. Murkowski said federal legislation must recognize Alaska's high cost premium on the insurance exchange there average about $1,000 a month for an individual, according to federal data. But the special provision may not be enough to win Mrs. Murkowski's vote. She's also concerned about two other sections of the bill, one that would cut federal funds and expansion of Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, and one that would block federal Medicaid payments to Planned Parenthood. So there you have it, boys and girls. This is a disaster waiting to happen, and for the Republicans to foist it on American people, touting it as the next great thing to slice bread, is frankly disingenuous. Let's take a break and finish up on the other side of the break. We're back here, Mark and Bubba International, New York, with yours truly, Dennis D. Shipman. 63 degrees and sunny on a rather cool Monday morning. 6/26/2017, we're talking about the repeal and replace travesty that the Senate is trying to foist on the American people, and ignorant American people. You know, we're really ignorant in this country, and we're going to talk about that and talk more about it over the coming weeks. So stay tuned to Market and Pulpit International, because this infects you, it affects me, it affects my family, it affects your family. And have a good week. Thank you.
to me, and it starts with you. It's complicated.